Richard peeked around the side of the building and saw dazzling light blazing from all the windows in the palace, even those in the high towers. Light seemed to be oozing through the joints in the stone. "Can you run some more?" he asked as he panted. "I didn't want to stop," she said. Richard knew the city well between the palace and the countryside. He led Kaelin through the confused, frightened, ululating mass of people, up streets tight with buildings and those wide with trees, until they reached the outskirts of Tanimura. Halfway up the hill out of the valley where the city lay, he felt a hard thud in the ground that nearly took his feet out from under him. Without looking back, Richard swept an arm around Kaelin and dove with her into a low cut in the granite. Sweaty and exhausted, they clung together as the ground shook. They stuck their heads up just in time to see the light ripping apart the massive towers and stone walls of the Palace of the Prophets, as if they were paper before a hurricane. The whole of Halsband Island seemed to rend. Parts of trees and huge chunks of lawns lifted into the air along with stone of every size. A blinding flash drove a dome of dark debris before it. The river was stripped of water and bridges. The curtain of light expanded outward with a clacking roar. The city beyond the island somehow stood up against the fury. Overhead, the sky lit as if a celestial vault were flaring in sympathy with the bedazzling core below. The skirts of the shimmering bell of light overhead cascaded to the ground miles away from the city. Richard remembered that boundary. It was the outer shield that kept him here when he wore a Rada Han. "Bringer of death indeed," Kaelin whispered as she watched, awestruck. "I didn't know you could do such a thing."
"Neither did I," Richard said under his breath.
A blast of air tore at the grass as it roared headlong up the hill. They ducked down as a roiling wall of sand and dirt raced past. They cautiously set up when all went still. Night had returned, and in the sudden darkness Richard couldn't see much below, but he knew. The Palace of the Prophets was gone.
"You did it, Richard," Kaelin said at last.
"We did it," he answered, as he stared down at the dead, dark hole in the center of the city lights.
"I'm glad you brought that book. I want to know what else it says about you."
A smile began to spread on her lips.
"I guess Jigang won't be living there."
"I guess not."
"Are you all right?"
"Fine," she said.
"But I'm glad it's over."
"I'm afraid it's only just begun. Come on, the sliff will get us back to Aidendrill."
"You still haven't told me what this sliff is."
"I don't think you would believe me. You'll just have to see it for yourself."
"Quite impressive, Wizard Zorander," Anne said, turning away.
Zed gave a dismissive grunt.
"Not my doing."
Anne wiped the tears from her cheeks, glad for the darkness so he couldn't see them, but she had to work to keep her voice from betraying her emotion.
"You may not have thrown on the torch, but you did the work of stacking the pyre. Quite impressive. I've seen a light web tear apart a room, but this..."
He laid a gentle hand on her shoulder.
"I'm sorry, Anne." "Yes, well, what must be, must be."
Zed squeezed her shoulder as if to say he understood.
"I wonder who threw the torch. The Sisters of the Dark can use subtractive magic. One of them must have accidentally ignited the light web."
Zed peered over at her in the dark.
"Accidentally?"
He took his hand back as he voiced only a dubious snort.
"That had to have been it," she said as she sighed.
"A little bit more than an accident, I would say."
She detected a hint of pride in his wistful whisper.
"Like what?"
He ignored a question.
"We'd better find Nathan."
"Yes," Anne said, suddenly remembering the prophet. She squeezed Holly's hand.
"This is where we left him. He has to be around here somewhere."
Anne stared off toward the moonlit hills in the distance. She could see a group of people moving up the north road, a coach and a band of people mostly on horseback. There were too many not to be able to sense them. It was her Sisters of the Light. Thank the Creator, they had gotten away after all.
"I thought you could find him by that infernal collar."
Anne began casting about in the brush.
"I can. It tells me he should be right here somewhere. Perhaps the blast injured him. Since the spell was destroyed, he had to have been here doing his part with the outer shield, so maybe he was hurt. Help me look."
Holly searched too, but stayed close. Zed wandered off toward an open, flat place. Guided by the way the branches and brush were bent and broken, he was looking near the center of the node, where the power would have been concentrated. As she stooped to look among the low places in the rocks, Zed called out to her. Anne took Holly's hand and hurried to the old wizard.
What is it?
He pointed. Standing up so they couldn't miss it, stuck in a crack in a round hump of granite was something round. Anne wiggled it free. She stared incredulously.
It's Nathan's Radahan,
Holly gasped.
Oh, Anne, maybe he was killed. Maybe Nathan was killed by the magic.
Anne turned it around. It was locked closed.
No, Holly.
She stroked a comforting hand down the child's hair.
He wasn't killed, or there would be some traces of him. But, dear Creator, what does this mean?
What does it mean?
Zed chuckled.
It means he got free. He stuck it in that rock so you'd be sure to see it, as if to thumb his nose at you.
Nathan wanted us to know he got the collar off on his own. He must have linked the power of the node to it or something.
Zed sighed.
Well, he's gone. Now get mine off.
Anne's hand holding the Radahan lowered as she looked out into the night.
We have to find him.
Take my collar off, as you promised, and then you can gad off after him. Without me, I might add.
Anne felt her anger heating.
You're coming with me.
With you? Bags, I'm doing no such thing.
You're coming.
You intend to break your word?
No, I intend to keep it, just as soon as we find that troublesome prophet. You have no idea of the complications that man can cause.
What do you need me for?
She shook her finger at him.
You're coming with me whether you like it or not, and that's all there is to it. When we find him, then I take that collar off, not before.
He shook his fists in a sputtering fit while Anne strode off to collect the horses. Her gaze wandered to the moonlit hill in the distance, to the band of sisters heading north. When Anne reached the horses, she squatted down before Holly.
Holly, as your first assignment as a novice to be a sister of the light, I have a very important, urgent duty for you.
Holly nodded seriously.
What is it, Anne?
It's critical that Zed and I go find Nathan. I hope it won't be long, but we must hurry before he gets away.
Before he gets away, Zed howled behind her. He's had hours. He's got a huge lead. There's no telling where the man went. He's already gotten away.
Anne glanced back over her shoulder.
We have to find him.
She turned back to Holly.
We need to hurry, and I don't have time to go catch up with the Sisters of the Light over on that hill there. I need you to go to them and tell Sister Verna everything you know about what's happened.
What should I tell her?
Whatever you know about what you've seen and heard while you've been with us. Tell her the truth and don't make up anything. It's important that she know what's going on. Tell her that Zed and I are going after Nathan, and that when we can, we will join up with them. But our first priority is finding the prophet. Tell her to head north, as they're doing, to escape the order.
I can do that.
It's not far, and the road right over here will take you to the road they will be riding up, so you won't miss them. Your horse knows and likes you, so she'll take good care of you. You'll be there in just an hour or two, and then you'll have all the sisters to keep you safe and love you. Sister Verna will know what to do.
I'll miss you until you catch up with us,
Holly said, her voice choked with tears. Anne hugged the little girl.
Oh, child, I'll miss you so much, too. I wish I could take you with us. You've been such a help. But we must hurry if we're to catch Nathan. The sisters, especially Prelate Verna, need to know what's happened. It's important. That's why I must send you.
Holly bravely snuffled back the tears.
I understand. You can count on me, Prelate.
Anne helped the girl up into the saddle and kissed her hand as she put the reins in them. Anne watched and waved farewell as Holly trotted off toward the Sisters of the Light. She turned to the fuming wizard.
We'd best be going if we're to catch Nathan.
She patted his bony shoulder.
It won't be long. Just as soon as we catch him, I'll have that collar off your neck, I promise.
Chapter 52 The Hagen woods were as dark and uninviting as ever, but Richard was sure that the Mriswith were gone. In their journey through the gloomy wood, he hadn't sensed even one of them. The place, though forbidding, was deserted. The Mriswith had all left for Adendrill. He shuddered to think what that meant. Kaelin sighed nervously, twining her fingers together as she stared at the Slif's pleasant, smiling, quicksilver face.
Richard, before we do this, just in case something goes wrong, I want to tell you that I know about what happened when you were a captive here, and I don't hold it against you. You thought I didn't love you, and you were alone. I understand.
Richard leaned closer as he frowned.
What are you talking about?
What things I did? She cleared her throat.
Marissa. She told me all about it.
Marissa?
Yes. I understand, and I don't blame you. You thought you would never see me again.
Richard blinked in astonishment. "Marissa is a sister of the dark. She wants to kill me."
"But she told me how, when you were here before, she was your teacher. She said that, well, I met her, and she's beautiful. You were lonely, and I don't blame you."
Richard took her by the shoulders and forced her to turn away from staring at the sliff. "Kaelin, I don't know what Marissa told you, but I'm telling you the truth. Since the day I met you, I've loved no one but you, no one. Yes, when you made me put on the collar and I thought I would never see you again, I was lonely. But I never betrayed your love, even when I thought I had lost it. Even though I thought you didn't want me, I never... with Marissa or anyone else."
"Really?"
"Really." She smiled her special smile, the one she gave to no one but him. "Addie tried to tell me the same thing. Was afraid I would die before I could see you again, and wanted you to know that I love you no matter what. Part of me is afraid of doing this. I'm afraid I'll drown in there." "The sliff felt you, and she says you can travel. You have an element of subtractive magic, too. Only those with both magics can travel. It'll work. You'll see." He smiled encouragement. "It's nothing to be afraid of, I promise. It's unlike anything you've ever felt before. It's wondrous. All right now?" She nodded. "All right." She threw her arms around him and hugged him so hard she pressed the wind out of him. "But if I drown, I just want you to know how much I love you." Richard helped her up onto the stone wall around the sliff, and then glanced around at the dark woods beyond the ruins. He didn't know if there really were eyes watching, or it was simply his apprehension. He didn't sense a Mriswith, though, and if one were watching him, he would. He decided that it must be just his past experiences in Hagen Woods that made him apprehensive. "We're ready, Sliff. You know how long it will take."
"I am long enough,"
came the echoing reply. Richard sighed and tightened his grip on Kaelin's hand. "Do as we've told you," she nodded, gasping her last breaths. "I'll be with you. Don't be afraid." The liquid silver arm lifted them, and the night went truly black. Richard gripped Kaelin's hand tightly as they plunged downward, knowing how hard it had been for him to breathe in the sliff the first time. When she returned the squeeze, they were already in the weightless void. The familiar sensation of rushing and drifting at the same time returned, and Richard knew they were on their way to Adendrill. As before, there was no heat, no cold, no sense of being soaked in the quicksilver wet of the sliff. His eyes beheld light and dark together in a single spectral vision, while his lungs swelled with the sweet presence of the sliff as he inhaled her silken essence. Richard was joyous, knowing that Kaelin could feel the same rapture he felt. He could sense it through the slow pressure on his hand. They let go to take strokes through the still rush. Richard swam on through the darkness and light. He felt Kaelin grip his ankle and be towed along after him. Time meant nothing. It could have been a glimmer of a moment or the slow passing of a year as he soared ahead with Kaelin holding onto his ankle. As before, abruptly, it ended. Sights of the room and the keep exploded about him, but he knew what to expect, and this time there was no terror.
"Breathe,"
the sliff said. He let out the sweet breath, emptying his lungs of the rapture, and pulled in a breath of the alien air. He felt Kaelin come up behind him, and in the silence of Kolo's room, he heard her expel the sliff and inhale the air. Richard bobbed up, the sliff sloughing off him as he boosted himself onto the wall and over. Once his feet hit the floor, he turned and bent to help Kaelin out. Marissa smiled at him. Richard went rigid. At last his mind worked.
"Where's Kaelin? You're bonded to me. You gave an oath."
"Kaelin?"
came the melodious voice.
"She's right here."
Marissa reached down into the quicksilver.
"But you won't be needing her anymore. And I'm keeping my oath. An oath to myself."
She lifted Kaelin's limp form by the back of her collar. With the aid of her power, Marissa heaved Kaelin out of the sliff's well. Kaelin hit the wall and slumped, unbreathing, to the floor. Before Richard could rush to her, Marissa wrapped the blades of a yabri against the stone. A sweet song gripped him, making his legs go weak and impotent as he stared, spellbound, at Marissa's smiling face.
"The yabri sings for you, Richard. Its song calls you."
She drifted closer, bringing the humming yabri closer. She held it up, turning the resplendent object of his hunger, displaying it, tantalizing him with it. Richard wet his lips as his bones resonated with the purring hum of the yabri. The vibrant sound transfixed him. She floated closer, finally offering it to him. His fingers at last touched it, and the song coursed through every fiber of his body, charmed every corner of his soul.
Marissa smiled as his fingers curled around the crossbar. He shuddered with the enchantment of having it in his grasp. His fingers tightened in painful pleasure. She brought another Yabri out from under the silvery pool.
That's only the half of it, Richard. You need both.
She laughed, a pleasant, lilting sound, as she tapped the second Yabri against the stone. The song nearly blinded him with its longing for his touch. He struggled to keep his knees from buckling. He had to get to the second Yabri. He leaned over the wall, stretching for it. Marissa's grin mocked him, but he didn't care. He only wanted, needed, to have the twin to his Yabri in his other hand.
"Breathe," the Sliff said.
Distracted, Richard glanced over. The Sliff was looking at the woman slumped on the floor against the wall. He was about to speak when Marissa tapped the second Yabri against the stone again. His legs went boneless. He held his left arm with the Yabri in his fist over the wall to hold himself up.
"Breathe," the Sliff said again.
Through the enchanting, purring song singing through his bones, Richard struggled to make sense of who it was against the wall that the Sliff was speaking to. It seemed important, but he couldn't reason why. Who was it? Marissa's laugh echoed around the room as she tapped the Yabri again. Richard let out a helpless cry, both of ecstasy and longing.
"Breathe," the Sliff said again, more insistent.
Through the numbing song of the Yabri, it came to him. His inner needs surged up, sluicing through the benumbing melody that encased him.
"Caitlin."
He looked at her. She wasn't breathing. An inner voice cried out for help. When the Yabri sang again, his neck muscles went flaccid. His swirling gaze focused on something in the stone under him. Exigency stirred his muscles. His hand extended, his fingers touched it, his grip enveloped it, and a new need coursed through his bones, a need he knew well. With an explosion of fury, Richard yanked the Sword of Truth from the stone floor, and the room rang with a new song. Marissa fixed him with a murderous glare as she again wrapped the Yabri against the stone.
"You will die, Richard Rall. I have sworn to bathe in your blood, and I will."
With the last of his strength, powered by the sword's wrath, Richard heaved himself against the top of the stone wall and stretched down, plunging the blade into the quicksilver of the Sliff. Marissa shrieked. Silver veins fluxed through her flesh. Her screams echoed around the stone room as her arms reached up in a frantic effort to escape the Sliff, but it was too late. The metamorphosis coursed through her, and she waxed as glossy as the Sliff, like a silver statue in a silver reflecting pool. The hard edges of her face softened, and what had been Marissa dissolved into the lapping waves of quicksilver.
"Breathe," the Sliff said to Caitlin.
Richard threw the Yabri aside as he dashed across the room. He scooped Caitlin up in his arms and carried her to the well. He draped her over the wall, wrapped his arms around her abdomen, and squeezed.
"Breathe. Caitlin, breathe."
He compressed again.
"Do it for me. Breathe, please, Caitlin, breathe."
Her lungs expelled the quicksilver, and she gasped a sudden, desperate breath, and then another. At last, she turned in his arms and fell against him.
"Oh, Richard, you were right. It was so wonderful, I forgot to breathe. You saved me." "But he killed the other," the Sliff observed. "I warned him about the object of magic he carries. It is not my fault."
Caitlin blinked at the silver face.
"What are you talking about?" "The one that is part of me now."
"Marissa," Richard explained.
"It's not your fault, Sliff. I had to do it, or she would have killed both of us." "Then I am discharged of responsibility. Thank you, Master."
Caitlin spun back to him, glancing down at the sword.
"What happened?
What do you mean, Marissa?" Richard untied the thong at his throat, reached over his shoulder and pulled the Mriswith cape off his back.
"She followed us through the Sliff. She tried to kill you and to... well, she wanted to take a bath with me."
"What?"
"No," the Sliff corrected. "She said she wanted to bathe in your blood."
Caitlin's mouth dropped open.
"But what happened?" "She is with me now," the Sliff said. "For all time."
"That means she's dead," Richard said. "I'll explain when we have more time." He turned to the Sliff.
"Thank you for your help, Sliff, but I need you to sleep now." "Of course, Master. I will sleep until I am needed again."
The shiny silver face softened and melted back into the pool of quicksilver. Richard, without conscious direction, crossed his wrists. The lustrous pool took on a glow. The Sliff stilled and began sinking into the well, slowly at first, and then with gathering speed until she was gone. Kaelin stared up at him when he straightened.
I think there are a lot of things you are going to need to explain to me. When we have time, I promise. Where are we, anyway?
In the lower parts of the keep, at the base of one of the towers.
Lower parts of the keep?
Richard nodded. Down under the library.
Under the library? No one can go below the library level. There are shields that have kept every wizard from the lower keep for as long as anyone knows.
Well, that's where we are. And that, too, we'll have to talk about later. We have to get down to the city. They stepped out of Kolo's room, and immediately they both flattened themselves against the wall. The red Mriswith Queen was in the pool beyond the railing. She spread her wings protectively over a clutch of hundreds of eggs, the size of large melons, as she trumpeted a warning that echoed around the inside of the huge tower. From what little light that came in from the openings overhead, Richard could see that it was late afternoon. It had taken less than a day, at least he hoped, just one day, to reach Adendrill. In the light, he could also see the vast extent of the clutch of splotchy gray and green eggs atop the rock.
It's the Mriswith Queen, Richard hastily explained as he climbed the railing. I have to destroy those eggs.
Kaelin shouted his name, trying to call him back as he vaulted the railing into the dark, slimy water. Richard held out his sword as he waded through the waist-deep water toward the slick rocks in the center. The queen rose up on her claws, venting a clacking bellow. Her head snaked close to him, her jaws snapping. In that moment, Richard swung the sword. The grotesque head recoiled. She huffed a cloud of acrid aroma at him that carried a clear message of warning. Relentlessly, Richard slogged ahead. Her jaws gaped, revealing long, sharp teeth. Richard couldn't let the Mriswith have Adendrill. And if he didn't destroy these eggs, then there would be even more Mriswith to deal with.
Richard! I tried to use the blue lightning, but it won't work down here. Come back!
The hissing queen snapped at him. Richard stabbed at the head when it came close, but she kept just out of reach and roared in anger. Richard was able to keep the head at bay while he groped for a handhold. He found a crag to grasp and scrambled up onto the dark, slimy rocks. He swung the sword, and when the menacing jaws pulled back, he hacked at the eggs. Stinking yolk oozed across the dark stone as he broke the thick, leathery shells. The queen went wild. Her wings flapped, lifting her clear of the rock and out of the reach of Richard's sword. Her tail lashed around, snapping like a huge whip. When the tail came close, Richard swung the sword to keep her at bay. He was more interested in destroying the eggs at the moment. Her teeth snapped as she lunged at him. Richard thrust the sword, piercing her neck with a glancing strike, enough that the queen reeled back in pain and fury. Her frantically flapping wings knocked him sprawling across the rock. Richard rolled to the side to avoid the slashing claws. Her tail thrashed at him again, and her jaws snapped. Richard was forced to forget the eggs for the moment and defend himself. If he could kill her, it would simplify the task. The queen squealed in anger. A moment later, Richard heard a crunching sound. He turned toward the noise and saw Kaelin smashing eggs with a board that had been part of the door to Kolo's room. He scrambled across the slippery rock to put himself between Kaelin and the enraged queen. He slashed at the head when it tried to bite them, at the tail when it tried to sweep him from the rock, and at the claws when they tried to rip him apart.
You just keep it away, Kaelin said as she swung the board, smashing eggs and wading into the gooey yellow muck. And I'll take care of these.
Richard didn't want Kaelin in danger, but he knew she was defending her city too, and he couldn't ask her to go hide. Besides, he needed her help. He had to get down to the city.
Just hurry, he said between dodging and attacking.
The huge red bulk flung itself at him, trying to crush him against the rock. Richard dove to the side, but the queen still came down on his leg. He cried out in pain and slashed with the sword as the beast gnashed at him. The board suddenly whacked down on top of the fleshy slits atop the queen's head. She staggered back in howling pain, her wings flapping wildly and her claws raking the air. Kaelin hooked an arm through his and helped pull him away as the red body lifted. They both tumbled back into the stagnant water.
I got them all, Kaelin said. Let's get out of here. I have to get her or she'll just lay more.
But the Mriswith Queen, seeing all her eggs destroyed, switched from attack to escape. Her wings beat madly, lifting her into the air. She lunged at the wall, fastening her claws to the stone, and began to climb toward a large opening high up on the tower. Richard and Kaelin pulled themselves out of the reeking pool and onto the walkway. Richard started for the stairs that wound their way up around the inside of the tower, but when he put weight on his leg, he crashed to the floor. Kaelin helped him stand.
You can't get to her now. We destroyed all the eggs. We'll just have to worry about her later. Is your leg broken?
Richard leaned against the railing, rubbing the painful bruise as he watched the queen climb out the opening high up in the tower.
No, she just mashed it against the rock. We have to get down to the city.
But you can't walk.
I'll be all right. The pain is easing up. Let's go.
Richard took one of the glowing spheres to light the way, and with Kaelin giving him support, they started out of the belly of the keep. She had never been in the rooms and halls he took her through. He had to hold her in his arms to help her get through the shields, and constantly caution her what she mustn't touch and where she must not step. She repeatedly questioned his warnings but followed his insistent orders, muttering to herself that she had never known these peculiar places existed in the keep. By the time they had wound their way up through the rooms and halls to the top, his leg, though it still hurt, was working better. He could walk, if with a limp.
"At last, I know where we are," Kaelin said when they came up to the long hall before the libraries. "I was worried we would never get out from down there."
Richard headed toward the corridors he knew to be the way out. Kaelin protested that he couldn't go that way, but he insisted that that was the way he always went, and she reluctantly followed. He held her to get her through the shield into the great hall at the entrance, and they were both glad for the excuse.
"How much farther?" she asked as she looked around the near barren room.
"Right here. This is the door out." When they went through the door to the outside, Kaelin turned around twice in astonishment. She snatched his shirt and gestured to the door.
"There? You went in there? That's the way you went into the keep?"
Richard nodded.
"That's where the stone path led."
She pointed angrily above the door.
"Look what it says! And you went in there?"
Richard glanced up at the words carved in the stone lintel above the huge door.
"I don't know what those words mean."
"Tavo de Ator Mortado," she said, reading the words aloud. "It means Path of the Dead."
Richard glanced briefly at the other doors beyond the expanse of stone chips and gravel. He remembered the thing that had come for them under the gravel.
"Well, it seemed the biggest door, and the path led right to it, so I thought that was the way to go in. Kind of makes sense when you think about it. I am named the Bringer of Death."
Kaelin rubbed her arms in dismay.
"We were frightened you would come up into the keep. We were scared to death you would go in there and be killed. Dear spirits, I can't believe you weren't. Not even the wizards would go in this entrance.
That shield just inside wouldn't allow me to pass without your help. That alone means it's perilous beyond. I can pass all the shields except those protecting the most dangerous places."
Richard heard a crunching of rock and saw movement in the gravel. He pulled Kaelin back onto the center of a stepping stone as the thing took a snaking course toward them.
"What's the matter?" she asked. Richard pointed.
"Something's coming."
Kaelin cast him a frown over her shoulder and walked out onto the gravel.
"You're not afraid of this, are you?"
She squatted and burrowed her hand into the gravel as the thing beneath came to her. She wiggled her hand around as if scratching a pet.
"What are you doing?"
Kaelin grappled playfully with the thing under the gravel.
"It's just a stonehound. Wizard Giller conjured him up to frighten away a woman who was pestering him all the time. She was afraid to cross the gravel, and of course no one in their right mind would dare to go into the path of the dead."
Kaelin stood.
"You mean, don't tell me you're afraid of the stonehound."
"Well, no, not exactly, but..."
Kaelin put her fists on her hips.
"You went into the path of the dead and through those shields because you were afraid of a stonehound? That's why you didn't go to the other doors?"
"Kaelin, I didn't know what the thing under the gravel was. I'd never seen anything like it before."
He scratched his elbow.
"All right, so I was afraid of it. I was trying to be cautious, and I couldn't read the words, so I didn't know that this door was dangerous."
She shot a stymied look skyward.
"Richard, you could have..."
"I didn't get killed in the keep. I found the slip and I got to you. Now, come on, we need to get down to the city."
She put her arm around his waist.
"You're right. I guess I'm just edgy from..."
She lifted a hand toward the door.
"From all that happened in there. That Mriswith queen frightened me. I'm just thankful that you made it."
Arm in arm, they hurried through the towering arched opening through the outer wall. As they rushed under the huge portcullis, a powerful red tail whipped around from beyond the corner, felling them both. Before Richard could get his wind back, wings were beating overhead. Claws ripped at him. He felt searing pain in his left shoulder as a claw hooked him. Kaelin was sent tumbling across the ground by the thrashing tail. While he was being hauled closer to the gaping jaws by the claw embedded in his shoulder, he yanked his sword free. The rage inundated him instantly. He slashed through a wing. The queen recoiled, yanking the claw free from his shoulder. The wrath of the magic helped him ignore the pain as he sprang to his feet. He stabbed with the sword as the beast lunged at him, snapping her jaws. She seemed all wings, teeth, claws, and tail, plunging at him as he scurried backward. Richard stabbed an arm, and the queen drew back in pain. Her tail lashed around, catching him across the middle, throwing him up against the wall. He hacked wildly at the tail, taking off the tip. The red Mriswith queen reared back on her hind feet, under the spiked portcullis. Richard dove for the catch lever and caught it with all his weight. With a squealing clatter, the gate plunged toward the raving beast. The queen twisted as the gate crashed down, just missing her back, but catching a wing, pinning it to the ground. She howled even louder. Richard started in cold fright when he saw that Caelan was on the ground, on the other side of the gate. The queen saw her too, and with a mighty effort, ripped her wing out from under the gate, tearing it into long, ragged shreds.
"Caelan, run!"
Groggy, she tried to crawl away, but the beast pounced. It snatched her by a leg, holding her fast. The queen turned and spewed a fetid odor at him. Richard had no trouble understanding the meaning. Revenge. With mad effort, he pulled at the wheel that lifted the gate. It rose inches at a time. The queen was wriggling down the road, dragging Caelan by her leg. Richard released the wheel, and driven by the fury of the magic, swung the sword at the flat bars of the portcullis. Sparks and hot shards of steel smoked through the air. Screaming in rage, he swung the sword again at the iron, ripping another gash through the bars. A third swing, and a piece was cut free. He kicked it over and plunged through the opening. Richard charged down the road toward the retreating red beast. Caelan clawed at the ground in a desperate attempt to get away. When it reached the bridge, the queen hopped up on the wall at the edge, snarling at him as he came at full speed. The queen flapped its shredded wings, as if it didn't realize it couldn't fly. Still running, Richard screamed out as it turned, spreading its wings in readiness to leap off the bridge with its prize. The tail swept across the road as Richard raced onto the bridge. He lopped off a 6-foot section. The queen spun, holding Caelan upside down by her leg, like a stick doll. Richard, beyond reason, swung the sword in a blind rage as she snapped at him. Sprayed by the beast's blood, he slashed off the front half of a wing, the bone splintering to white shards under his blade. She lashed her truncated tail at him as she flapped her other mangled wing. Caelan screamed as she stretched toward Richard, her finger spread, just out of reach. He drove the sword into the red belly. A red claw pulled Caelan away as he tried to snatch her hand. Richard sheared the other wing off at the shoulder. Blood sprayed the air as the raging beast twisted this way and that, trying to get at him. It kept her from her hunger to rip Caelan apart. Richard took off another section of tail when it came close enough. As the reeking blood sprayed everywhere, the queen's reactions became sluggish, allowing Richard to inflict still more wounds. Richard lunged and seized Caelan's wrist, and she his, as he drove the sword hilt deep up into the underside of the heaving red chest. It was a mistake. The mortally wounded Mriswith queen had a death grip on Caelan's leg. The red beast teetered, and, with a nightmarishly slow twist, tumbled off the bridge over the yawning abyss. Caelan shrieked. Richard tightened his hold on her with all his strength. The pull on his arm as the queen fell slammed his stomach against the wall above the dizzying drop. Richard swung the sword over the edge and, with one powerful stroke, sheared the arm that held Caelan's leg. The red beast spiraled down between the sheer walls that dropped for thousands of feet to disappear in the distance far below. Caelan hung by his hand over the same drop. Blood was running down his arm and over their hands. He could feel her wrist slipping through his grip. His thighs were the only thing keeping him from going over the wall. With a mighty effort, he lifted her a couple of feet.
"Grab the wall with your other hand. I can't hold you. You're slipping."
Caelan slapped her free hand onto the top of the stone wall, taking some of the weight. He tossed the sword to the road behind and got his other hand under her arm. Richard gritted his teeth and, with her help, pulled her up over the wall and onto the road.
"Get it off," she cried. "Get it off!"
Richard pried the claws open and extracted her leg. He tossed the red arm over the edge. Caelan fell into his arms, panting in exhaustion, too weary to speak. Through the throb of pain, Richard felt the heady warmth of relief.
"Why didn't you use your power? The lightning?" "It wouldn't work down inside the keep, and out here that thing knocked me senseless." "Why didn't you use yours, some of that fearful black lightning, like back at the Palace of the Prophets?"
Richard considered the question.
"I don't know. I don't know how the gift works. It has something to do with instinct. I can't make it work at will."
He stroked a hand down her hair as he closed his eyes.
"I wish Zed were here. He would be able to help me control it, learn to use it. I miss him so."
"I know," she whispered. Over their labored breathing, he could hear the distant cries of men and the ring of steel.
He realized he smelled smoke. The air was hazy with it. He helped Kaelin up, ignoring the fierce ache in his shoulder, and they rushed down the road to a switchback, where there was a view of the city below. As they stumbled to an abrupt halt at the edge, Kaelin gasped. In shock, Richard sank to his knees.
"Dear spirits," he whispered, "what have I caused?"
Chapter 53.
"It's Lord Rawl!"
Voices carried the shout back through the horde of Dharan troops.
"Rally! It's Lord Rawl!"
A cry swelled in the late afternoon air. Thousands of voices rose above the din of battle, weapons thrust into the smoky air with the roar of the shouts.
"Lord Rawl! Lord Rawl! Lord Rawl!"
Grim-faced, Richard marched through the soldiers at the rear of the battle. Wounded, bleeding men staggered to their feet and joined in the throng following him. Through the haze of acrid smoke, Richard could see down the slope of the streets to the frantic fighting at the van of dark, uniformed Dharans. Beyond, a sea of red flooded into the city, driving them back. Blood of the Fold. To each side and all around they came, relentless, unstoppable.
"There must be well over 100,000, Kaelin said, seemingly to herself. Richard had sent a force of 100,000 to search for Kaelin. They were weeks away from the city. He had divided the force in Aidendrill nearly in two and sent half away. And now came the Blood of the Fold to take advantage of his mistake. But still, there should have been enough Dharans to hold against that many. Something was deadly wrong. With a growing crowd of wounded dragging along behind, Richard reached the rear of what seemed the largest battle. The Blood of the Fold were pressing in from all sides of the city. Flames snapped skyward from King's Row. In the center of the sweep of dark uniforms stood the white splendor of the Confessor's Palace. Officers came at a run, their joy at seeing him tempered by what was happening just beyond. The screams from the sight of the fighting burned through his nerves. Richard was surprised to hear the dead, calm quality of his own voice. "What's going on? These are Dharan soldiers. Why are they being driven back? They are not outnumbered. Why are the Blood of the Fold this far into the city?" The seasoned commander spoke only one word.
"Mriswith."
Richard's fists tightened. These men had no defense against Mriswith. One Mriswith would cut down dozens of men in a matter of minutes. Richard had seen long lines of Mriswith enter the Slough, hundreds of them. The Dharans may not have been outnumbered at the start, but they were now. Already, the voices of the spirits were speaking to him, drowning out the screams of mortal pain. He glanced to the dull disk of the sun behind the smoke. 2 hours of light left. Richard's gaze met the eyes of three of the lieutenants.
You and you, collect whatever size force you need.
Without turning, he lifted a thumb behind to gesture toward Kaelin.
Get the Mother Confessor, my queen, to the palace and protect her.
The look in Richard's eyes made any statement of the mission's gravity absolutely unnecessary, and any warning of the consequences of failure superfluous. Kaelin cried out a protest. Richard drew his sword.
Now!
The men bounded to do as bidden, sweeping Kaelin back with them as she screamed at him. Richard didn't look, nor did he hear her words. He was already lost in the living rage. Magic and death danced dangerously in his eyes. Silent men inched back in a widening circle. Richard wiped the blade and the blood on his arm to give his sword a taste. The rage twisted tighter. His head turned, the eyes of death seeking the walking dead. Through the twin storms of the sword's wrath and his own anger, he heard nothing but the howling fury inside, yet he knew he needed more. In staccato succession, he felled all the barriers and loosed all the magic, holding back nothing. He was one with the spirits within, with the magic, with the need. He was the true seeker, and more. He was the bringer of death come to life. And then he was moving through the men trying to get to the front, through the dark leather-clad soldiers grunting with determination as they grappled with crimson-caped men in shiny armor who had broken through the lines, through shopkeepers who had taken up swords, through young men of the city with pikes and boys with cudgels. As he stalked forward, he cut down the men of the Blood of the Fold only when they tried to bar his path. He was after something more deadly than them. Richard vaulted up onto an overturned wagon in the center of the melee. Men swarmed around him to keep harm away. His raptor's gaze scanned the scene. Harm was his purpose. Before him, the sea of red capes inundated the dark shore of dead Dharans. The numbers of Dharan dead were appalling, but he was lost in the magic, and thought for anything but his enemy was mere dross in the cauldron of his wrath. Somewhere in the dim recesses of his mind, he cried out at the sight of so much death, but the cry was lost in the winds of his rage. Richard felt their presence, and then he saw them. Fluid movement, scything into living flesh, reaping a harvest of death. The blood of the fold surged in behind them, overwhelming the decimated Daharans. Richard brought the Sword of Truth up, touching the crimson blade to his forehead. He gave the whole of himself over.
"Blade," he whispered in supplication. "Be true this day.
Bringer of death."
"Dance with me, death," he murmured. "I am ready."